Do some people deserve the suffering they're enduring? Or should there always be room for compassion when there's criminal behavior, regardless of why a person did what they did, and that behavior ends in tragedy, not just for the family, but really for the entire community? If your community is struggling to find its way in a crisis, you'll want to hear how Dr. William Cook has done it in tiny Austin, Indiana. Welcome to another episode of The Unlovely Truth. I'm your host, private investigator, and church safety advocate, Lori Morrison. Join me for another captivating true crime story where physical, spiritual, and emotional safety takeaways are waiting for us. This is Season 5, Episode 11. We're going to take a two-part deep dive into Dr. William Cook's incredible book, Canary in the Coal Mine, Out in Rural Community, A Hidden Epidemic, and A Lone Doctor Battling for the Life, Health, and Soul of the People. We'll also talk about ideas for how anybody can be what I like to call a different kind of PI. Not a private investigator like me, but a person of impact in your community. The U.S. Census Bureau says that roughly 20% of the U.S. population lives in a rural area, even though urban areas make up only 3% of the U.S. landmass. That often means that our rural citizens don't always have direct access to things that a lot of us take for granted. In Austin, Indiana, from the mid-1970s until 2004, the town had no doctor of its own. When Dr. Cook set up his practice, he had no idea the journey he was about to take. Not very many doctors start solo practices in impoverished areas, but Dr. Cook really felt like that was his calling. Some of his patients had never even seen a doctor before. Now, that's not something we expect to hear about in America in this day and age, is it? This tiny community, and so many others like it, struggled with more than its share of homelessness, sex work, teen pregnancy, drug abuse and addiction, as well as child abuse and domestic violence. It wasn't long before Dr. Cook noticed a pattern. Lots and lots and lots of his patients were there trying to get heavy-duty narcotic painkillers. He had more than one female patient who admitted to trading sex for a safe place to stay, those drugs, or food for her children. Sadly, he found that most of the churches in the area didn't want to address issues like drug abuse, sex work, or homelessness. I wish they had, because a bigger problem was coming. One that probably wouldn't have been so very devastating for the community if the churches had addressed those other issues proactively. Of course, prescription drug abuse is nothing new. People learn the tricks of the trade, like complaining of tooth pain to your dentist once your primary care doctor wouldn't give you any more pain pills. Or if that didn't work anymore, you'd visit a pill mill, like the one I described in an earlier episode, and I've put a link to that episode in the show notes for you. Now, whatever your feelings are about Big Pharma, we could do a whole episode or two just on that. Once they realized that people were crushing and snorting their pain pills to get a more intense high, they did take action. They reformulated those pills to be harder to crush. Now, some people say they reformulated them because a patent was getting ready to expire. Whatever their actual motivations, it was supposed to be a good thing that these pills would be harder to crush. But sometimes even the best-intentioned actions have unintended consequences. It didn't take long for addicts to figure out that that hard shell that the pills now had could be melted with heat. Then the inner part could be dissolved in water and injected. No one foresaw where this new way of getting high was going to take Austin, Indiana. In 2015, you had to have a prescription to legally obtain syringes. This made them a really hot commodity, and once someone had one, they used it and reused it. Unfortunately, they also shared those needles. This, of course, led to all kinds of infections. It's so ironic. The stuff that people were using supposedly to make them feel better was making them terribly sick and often dangerously sick. What the community didn't realize was that someone who was HIV positive had moved to Austin in 2011. Suddenly, the eyes of the whole country focused on the tiny town when case after case after case of newly diagnosed HIV infections started popping up. I remember hearing that on the news and seeing the articles. Do you remember? If you remember that time, shoot me an email and let me know what your concerns were and what your thoughts were in that moment. With an astonishing, but not terribly surprising, failure of all of the different governmental offices that needed to work on this, with their failure to communicate with each other, state officials didn't bother to warn anyone in Austin of these patterns that they were starting to see. Weeks passed before a press release was finally issued, warning people not to inject drugs, share needles, or have sex with commercial sex workers. Now, remember the women who would fit into that last category simply because they were trying to feed their children? Did any of these government entities set up a place that had resources that were going to help them with those kids? And were addicts really going to quit cold turkey just because someone issued a press release? Something needed to be done, and fast. Now, that's rarely how anything works in the real world, right? As the government authorities seemed to be moving in slow motion, people were coming to visit Dr. Cook with real-time problems. One of them was a woman that he'd known for years. Her name was Deb, and ironically, she was an addiction counselor. Her husband was a policeman, and their son Jude was addicted to narcotics. This new threat of HIV transmission in the addict community scared Deb to death. Jude had first taken narcotics for a high school football injury. Now, he was 20 years old and still hadn't shaken the craving for the high that that medicine gave him. Now, was Jude a criminal who maybe was getting what he deserved? Or was he a kid who made some mistakes and was now in a downward spiral that he could not turn around all by himself? People use drugs for all kinds of reasons. Some, like Jude, start off with a legitimate need that spirals out of control. Others, like Austin resident Tyler, were trying to get rid of the pain that they had carried around from childhood sexual abuse. Then there was Samantha, who used the narcotics legitimately for a dental issue, and she found out that for the first time in her life, she felt safe. These were the kind of people who Dr. Cook thought he could help. But what about the people who were living really off the grid? The people that he couldn't find? People who were so down on their luck that they lived in abandoned houses, and they didn't have a driver's license, let alone health insurance. Did you know that there are people like that everywhere? Even in your community? When Dr. Cook let the town know that he was committed to helping HIV-infected individuals, he found out that not everyone was really so on board with that idea. He heard comments like, "Why not just let them die?" And those worthless addicts, dying is nothing more than social Darwinism. His patients started canceling appointments, and he even received death threats. Now, this was long after we had all learned that casual contact doesn't spread the HIV virus. I'm from Indiana, and I remember how badly Ryan White was treated. He was a young man, around my age, who contracted HIV from a blood transfusion. He was barred from attending school back in the 1980s. That's a long time ago. Should we have not learned to be more compassionate by now? And if you thought this story was getting a bit dramatic, just wait. Dr. Cook received a call one day letting him know that a group of people was planning to burn his clinic down. The reason? They felt that a doctor doing everything he could for his very ill patients was legitimizing criminal and what they decided was sinful behavior. There was another group of people who weren't happy with his work. And this one will really throw you. People who were in the habit of paying for sex didn't want him messing up their supply. So much criminal activity in communities is intertwined this way. Every evil act has a ripple effect. Dr. Cook's staff was understandably very concerned. I hope I'd have the courage to keep up that work, even with the kind of stress they had to have been feeling, but I don't know. I don't think any of us know unless we're actually in that position. But Dr. Cook reminded them how important the work they were doing really was. He said that they would never turn away anyone, no matter what society thought of that person or what they thought of the clinic for helping them. One of his staff members asked him why he was doing what he was doing. He told them it was because everyone was a child of God, no matter what. Well, let's stop here for just a second. I think our communities might not have some of these problems if every church in our communities had that kind of mindset. I hope you'll let me know what your opinion is on that. Shoot me an email or message me on social media. Some people in the community did step up and step in to help. One said that it drove them crazy not to be able to give suffering people anything other than just compassion. So they banded together and formed support groups, and they forged relationships with people who needed their help. Remember Jude? He found out that he was HIV positive. He had a fiance, and they had just had a stillborn child. The pain was so awful that he started using drugs again, and that's when he became infected. Dr. Cook treated him with respect and gave him hope. Now, next week, we'll see how Dr. Cook's efforts worked out, or didn't, in the long run. So be sure you tune into that. Every church has physical, emotional, and spiritual safety issues. Most just don't know it. Are you going to wait for a train wreck to occur at your church before you address those issues? Helping churches be proactive about safety is why I wrote Reclaiming Sanctuary, enhancing physical, emotional, and spiritual safety in our churches. I know it can be really, really hard to address unpleasant issues because I've been where you are, in a leadership position, needing an intentional approach customized to the needs of my unique ministry. That's why I'm offering a free 20-minute strategy call for church leaders to see if my work might be a good fit for you. So email me today at Lori, that's L-O-R-I, at theunlovelytruth.com, and we can get a conversation started about your church's needs and how we could work together to create a customized plan just for your ministry. Schedule your no-risk, all-reward call today. The Bible passage that I chose for this week is from the book of Luke, chapter 5, verses 31 and 32. Jesus said, "It is not the healthy who need a doctor, but the sick. I have not come to call the righteous, but sinners to repentance." The teachers of the law, the religious folk of the time, tried to trap Jesus over and over and over. After he called Levi to follow him, these leaders asked why Jesus and his other followers would eat and drink with people that they called sinners. How easy it can be to fall into that trap. Do their words remind you of the people who criticized Dr. Cook for his work and the ones even that threatened him? Does it remind you of anything else? Maybe something you've seen in your church? I know I've seen it in churches I've attended. And truth be told, I've probably even been guilty of it myself. God can't use us when we're showing that kind of pride. A wonderful group called Casting Crowns has a song called Jesus, Friend of Sinners. And it has some lyrics that will just stop you in your tracks and really make you think. And one of my favorites is this: "Nobody knows what we're for, only what we're against, when we judge the wounded." Now, I know that using drugs isn't a good choice, whether that's illegal drugs or whether it's misusing prescription drugs. Selling your body obviously isn't a great choice either. But we don't always know what has driven a person to make those choices. Jesus would have hung out with drug addicts and the homeless and the sex workers. So why aren't we? And if you already are doing that, I'm so glad to hear it. And if you don't, maybe it's because you just don't know how. If your church doesn't already have a ministry to feed the homeless, maybe you can work with another church's ministry or a local nonprofit. Now, one thing I don't recommend is going into a homeless camp by yourself. Criminals target the homeless because they are so vulnerable. So make sure you're going in with a group of people that has a plan, understands what the risks are doing things right. And if that type of ministry isn't for you, consider leading a Bible study in your local jail. I've done that before, and let me tell you, the vast majority of the women I met there had drug addiction issues. Many turned to sex work, or at least trading sex, to feed their habits. And a lot of times, they were pressured by their so-called boyfriends to bring in money that way. They need to hear that there is hope and that God still loves them. you'd be surprised how many were actually raised in church and have no idea that they have any worth or value. This book that we made it halfway through today just breaks my heart. I was raised in Indiana, so a lot of the places and names are very familiar to me. But really, this book could have been set just about anywhere. Every community struggles with these issues, whether we want to admit it or not. The real question is, do we want to be a part of the solution? Let me know what you thought about this episode. You can send me an email at laurie@theunlovelytruth.com or message me on social media. You can find me on LinkedIn at The Unlovely Truth, Instagram at The Unlovely Truth Podcast, or Facebook at The Unlovely Truth. I love it when people are willing to really have hard but impactful conversations. The Unlovely Truth is written and produced by me, Laurie Morrison. The music is by Neo Cortex, and the artwork for the logo is by Shelby Highland. See you all next time.